Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. Go ahead and tell everybody. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. Yes, I am, yes, I am, yes, I am. I'm the man, I'm the man. I'm
recording
the man.
In progress.
I believe every lie that I ever told. Paid for every heart that I ever stole. I played my cards and I didn't fold. Well, it ain't that hard when you got sold. Somewhere I heard that life is a test. I've been through the worst, but I still get my best. God made my mold different from the rest. Then he broke that mold, so I know I'm blessed. Stand up now and face the sun. Hide my tail or turn and
good afternoon, good evening, good morning, wherever you are listening to this live or on podcast. We'd like to thank you for joining us for another edition of Brother to Brother with Dr. Nate Chapman and Dr. Keelan Hinton. We're here for all of your mental health, love, relationship, and community needs. For those that would like to participate in the show, you can contact us at B2BPsych. That's B, the number 2, B, P-S-Y-C-H, at gmail.com. That's B2BPsych. @gmail.com. Again, as we always say, we'd like to thank Marshall University as well as WMUL for giving us this platform to talk about mental health issues, cultural issues, community issues, and everything else. But as we always say, any of the comments, suggestions, or perspectives that you hear on this show are not represented by Marshall University or WMUL, are not supported by any of its supporters, affiliates, or sponsors, but these are the sole perspectives of myself, Dr. Keelan Hinton, as well as Dr. Nate Chapman. So as we always say, take this advice, and while some of this may be therapeutic and informative, Dr. Chapman loves to remind us of what, sir, this is not what.
Yes, folks, you know, this is not therapy. We do hope that you find this helpful, that it helps you grow, helps you on your journey. And though we are both therapists, we didn't come in, you didn't give us the copay, we didn't take your insurance, and it's important for legal purposes for you to know this is not therapy.
Again, so, and to be clear, any of the perspectives, ideas, or anything that you hear from us is not representative of any of the entities that we consult for, any entities that we work for, that these are perspectives and ideas. So with that being said, it has been a minute. We thank those who continue to support the show, continue to send questions, comments, and suggestions, and let's rock and roll. These last couple of weeks, last week or so, has been a heavy week with quite a few mass shootings that have happened. So today we thought that we would share some ideas, perspectives. We would talk about some of the psychological and emotional consequences for those who may be involved, those who are watching this happen, continue to see these things happen over and over through the media. We thought we'd just talk about some of the nuances and bits and pieces of what's happening, to process some of it and just see, to try to give some helpful and informative information. And try to make and maybe answer some of the questions that people may be asking about these events that may be happening. But before we start, Dr. Chapman, sir, how are you, sir? How is sunny California treating you?
Yeah, I'm good, man. Ready to roll.
Good deal, good deal. West Virginia, always heaven. We're good here as well. So let's rock and roll. And before I came on, before I came to the station, I heard that there was another shooting in Tulsa.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'm torn. Is this one of something that I hear people say is, you know, and a question that's kicked around is this happening more? Why is this happening more? And I wonder, is this happening more, or we're just seeing more of it? Or what do you think about that? Is this happening more? Do we have more vehicles to help us see it? Is this something we should be alarmed about? What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I can't really give an informed answer on whether it's happening more, because I haven't looked at the data to do a comparison whether it is happening more or not. I mean, I think now in the last however long it's been since the incident in Texas, that more things have been getting on the news cycles, and I don't know if that means because we're seeing it in media more that it's happening more, or is that because it's becoming more of the headline based on whatever else is happening. Whether that's true or not, I don't think it takes away from the fact that it is happening.
Yeah.
Whether it's happening more or not, it's happening. And even the one that just came off today. So I think in some regards, they can't all be clustered together. We don't have enough information on the one that just happened. We really don't have all the information on the one in Texas yet. But I know on the one that just happened, when I got off before, the last thing I heard, it was like 4 people, I think, at this point that are victims or are deceased. And then also the shooter, that they're deceased and that was self-inflicted. And there's some talk about in that particular situation that maybe he was looking for a physician. We don't know yet. But I'm just saying, like, shootings, they're not all the same story. You know, sometimes they have different things going on. But it's still an issue. Whether it's happening more or less or just more in media now, it's an issue. Like, and what can we do about it, I guess, or one of the questions I think that's in our realm is, what do we think influences that, and what are the residual effects for the people that are impacted by it?
Yeah. Just my opinion. I don't think it's almost like I don't know if it's happening more or less. I do know that we now have the ability. Before, with the news, it was kind of like local news. Now we have cable, and we can see news in your region. You can see news in your state. You can see news nationally. You can see worldwide news. So I think now we have social media outlets. I think we have the ability now to broadcast things, and it looks as if because we can see it and we can see more of it, and we have the ability to broadcast it. It's almost like saying, people like to broadcast fights on social media. Why are people fighting more? No, we fought all the time. Just people didn't have camera phones. So it's like, is it happening more, or is this just a consequence of now we have these vehicles that we can see it when it happens? As before, people fought all the time, or, you know, there were gang fights or whatever all the time. Like, that kind of stuff is not unusual, but now we just have the ability to see it because we're seeing more of it, only because those we have these media outlets. It looks like it's happening more than before when we don't really know that. So I think that's important to say. What are the psychological and emotional ramifications of seeing this, on seeing violence, real life, on TV over and over and over and over again? You know, does it make us anxious? Does it make us scared? Do we become satiated to it? Do we even have a reaction to it? You know, we see so much violence on TV. We see so many soldiers and so many godfathers, and we see so many shows that we see people shooting. I'm interested to see people's response, and are they moved? And I wonder if there's a large segment of the population that doesn't really have the emotional response that we would think they should have, because we see so much of it, because we're satiated to it. This has happened before. You know what I mean? So I don't know. I don't know. It's interesting. Like, I know I'm speaking more and more about the media. I think for me, when I see this, I wonder, well, one, first and foremost, and I probably speak on behalf of both of us, like, prayers go out to the families, you know, the children, the people, the family, anybody that's that has been involved in any of these horrific acts or is attached to someone, you know, who has been involved in these horrific acts. I don't know. I wonder, what are the ramifications of seeing this happen over and over and over? Does it make you afraid to go to the grocery store now? Does it make you feel like you need to get a gun to protect yourself? Does it make you fearful of guns now? You know, it's interesting how at the center of this conversation for a lot of people are guns and what to do about guns. Do we have too many guns? Do we need to give guns a bad idea? Like, that's where that's the conversation that I hear circling in communities is, well, if it were tight, if we just got rid of guns, nobody needs a gun with a 20 capacity magazine. Nobody needs a magazine that holds 20 rounds, or people should just have a shotgun for hunting or whatever, you know. I don't know. I see this being politicized and becoming a conversation about guns all over again. And at the end of the day, Americans ain't giving up their guns. I don't care what nobody say. I don't care what you do. This could happen 100 times over. And these folks are not giving up their guns. You can cry, you can scream, you can march down Capitol Hill. It people will forever say it is their right to bear arms, and they will not give it up. They gonna tell you better think of something else to do, but it ain't giving up my guns.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. What are you thinking just about all this?
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, I think there's that angle that people talk about and gun control, which when I think about guns and the use of guns, lots of things come to my mind because I'm a veteran and I've used those types of rifles and training to do other things. But I think what comes to my mind the most, what I think about the most in these circumstances are how it shapes the way that people think about mental health. Because you listen to people's talking points, guns come up. The other thing that comes up is mental health. And there's different ranges on how people talk about that. Either they're blaming it solely on mental health on one end, and on the other end, the people that are really trying to do the work of making sure people are not stigmatizing mental health are saying, you know, trying to make this difference between mental health and just like pure evil, which is a whole another point of conversation. So I go places in my mind with that and where I think it is, and what's the, as a mental health professional, where do I think it really truly fits? And then I think the other thing I start to think about is just the trauma that comes after it. Like, even when you're talking about people watching it, you know, when we look at the definition of PTSD, which, you know, post-traumatic stress disorder from the diagnostic and statistical manual, sometimes people who don't know what that particular disorder is, you know, make assumptions about how you get it. And some people think, oh, you can just get it by watching something on TV. And they might be thinking in those cases about horror movies, but now we got to think about the news. It's not really a horror movie. It's something that really happened, even though it's not happening to you, and the level of effect that may have. Now, that's not going to cause PTSD in the form of the disorder, but it could definitely cause, depending on who it is that's watching it and what they've experienced, for them to make some associations with possibilities at school or church or grocery store, wherever it is. And those are just for the people that are not closely associated. Then the closer you get to that that circle of impact, the more likely you are to have actual PTSD. Or, you know what I'm saying? If you happen to be the person who your grandma went to the grocery store, you was expecting them to go get some ice cream and come back, right? And then all of a sudden you get a call that they've been shot down at the grocery store. Or, you know, your kid went to school, you know, and you expect them to have an average day, come home and bring them little stick figure drawings and tell you how their day was great. And now they're not coming back because somebody attacked them at school. So you have the level that's going to be experienced from the person who is left behind. Then you have the people that were there when it happened. right? You got the little Susie who's sitting next to Johnny when Johnny gets shot, or, you know, Bill is next to Ethel when she gets shot in the grocery store. I think about all those things, man. And then I think about people who outside of that, who have been traumatized in some other way that have nothing to do with these things and get affected by just watching this. Or it is a trauma related to it, like the people from like Sandy Hook are watching this and I kind of being re-traumatized. But it don't have to be that. Maybe you were somebody who has been traumatized in some other way and people don't recognize how these things can have links to like your vulnerability and the anxiety you feel in the world. And this is just another indicator that the world is not safe.
Yeah. Something that you just said struck me. I told you I teach a psychology and cinema course. And what I find interesting is that in this course, every semester, they never want to examine horror movies. Ever. So when I always ask them why, they say, well, it's just specific types of horror movies. And I, what do you mean, what type? The kind with spirits. The kind with spirits and ghosts and with anything that portrays like spirits and ghosts or the devil as a spirit. And I'm like, why? Because that could be real. So what I find interesting is that someone's perception, the closer it gets to reality for people, the more fear it invokes. So we could watch American Werewolf in London or whatever. I don't necessarily believe in werewolves, but something with someone being possessed evokes more fear because that could, 'cause from their perspective, that could happen for real. Now, when I'm watching TV, this happened for real. The closer that something is to reality, the more fear it invokes. Now, the thing is this. I believe the more we see images on TV, the more likely we feel things are to happen when that might not be the case. So it's like if we see on the news that a plane has crashed. It makes people afraid. Or we see on the news that somebody was on a Ferris wheel and it came unlatched and they fell out. Okay? I don't want to ride Ferris wheels anymore. But the statistical probability of that happening, thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people ride Ferris wheels and it never happens. But when you see something on TV and you see it over and over again, it gives this appearance that this is something that is likely to happen that it's not. It's just like an airplane. Like, I know people who are deathly afraid of riding airplanes because they saw a broadcast of an airplane crashing. You're more likely to get into a car wreck, far more likely to get into a car wreck than you are an airplane crash. Airplane crashes just look bad because so many people die at once. And I'm not saying that they aren't sad. That's not what I'm saying. But I'm saying that when you see something over and over and over, it could give the impression that it could happen. Hundreds of thousands of millions of people go to the movie theater daily and not just daily, weekly, and never get shot. But on two or three instances, somebody goes and they shoot up a movie theater and they play it over and over and over. It feels and looks like a likely scenario when hundreds of thousands of millions of people, you know, don't get shot. But my point is that how we report and how we broadcast and how we show and how we present these things. And the frequency with which I'll be interested to see how, like, the frequency with which we present these things to the public, how it shapes perspective and how it shapes people's perception of their likelihood that this could happen to me. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know how frequent school shootings or grocery store shootings are. But it feels like something that could happen to me tomorrow when I've seen it reran over and over and over 15 times in the last 2 hours on the news. And it's on my feed. And it's in the paper. And then, like, so I it's interesting to see. Like I said, I think the media is a double-edged sword. Like, we have to, you know, we have to report on these things. But also, I wonder, the way we report on things, the frequency with which the way we report on things, how that sort of shapes and affects the psyche of people watching.
I mean, I think it's a complicated question because obviously it affects the psyche. And then, as you said, you know, media is a double-edged sword. But when I think about the other things, like the mental health concerns, not necessarily that are directly associated with...
From the shooter's perspective or the experiencer's perspective?
I mean, all perspectives. It's complicated. We have to digest it. The trauma that's caused, the residual of it, all of these different things. I think even if people are being exposed to it more than they would like to, even to the point where that could cause some residual anxiety, if people are not exposed to things, then they don't do things to make decisions. And not to make it, not to go into the politics, because I kind of want to avoid that, but like policies get made based on obviously votes that are determined, and that's going to be, it's going to be hard for you to want to be involved in a movement where you don't really understand the implications. So media has a role in that. If something is affecting someone in Texas, but you live in Florida, and you can't see how this could be an issue for you, because it's not an issue for you right now, you know, and you could say those about the other things that people face, like sexism, racism, all these other issues, right? And so I think there's that component. Or even if it's not about policies, if it's just about what are we going to do about the underlying problems that could, maybe they don't lead to mass shootings, but they lead to other behaviors that are problematic in smaller ways that don't have such a bigger ruffle effect. So I heard somebody say something, it was, who was it? Maybe it was Ocho, Manuel Ocho, I think, was on a sports conversation about this. And he said something I thought was interesting. He said, you know, if they say if hurt people hurt people.
Yeah.
Well, if hurt people, then maybe we should be in the business of healing people.
Yeah.
And that's not even, we haven't really dug into like what's going on with the shooter and all those things. But I do think that there are a number of world over a variety of things, COVID, what's going on abroad, what might be going on in their hood, what's going on in their particular family that are hurt. And I think that some of those people may do actions that hurt people. I don't mean to the level of mass shooting. I mean simple interactions like, you know, talking to somebody sideways or things that are not going to be like real danger, but still are just a result of hurt. And then sometimes when we see these other situations, which we haven't really got to that discussion yet, there might be an argument that there is some level of hurt there. That doesn't mean hurt is going to make everybody dangerous. But if we're not aware of problems, we're not aware of the grander scale, then we can't do anything to try to rectify them. And it's not just about gun laws in my mind.
Okay. Station identification. This is WMUL 88.1 FM on your dial, Marsh University. Again, you're listening to Brother with Dr. Nate Chapman and Dr. Keelan Hinton. And again, we are processing, just sort of exploring, processing the recent mass shootings that have happened that have been televised lately from a lot of different perspectives. So those who are listening, we thank you for joining us. Should we be sympathetic to a shooter that has mental health issues?
Okay, well, that's an interesting question. All right, first, I think let's break it down a little bit more, because we know there's lots of different camps, and we know there are, I'll call them politicians, because I think that's usually who does the damage with this, the most damage, but it's not just politicians. And when they come out and say, when they want to defend their gun laws, and they say things like, well, you know, that's just this person had a mental health concern, all the other law-abiding citizens that have guns don't have a mental health concern, as if everybody who has a mental health concern is going to be out there going to get an AR-15 and shooting people up. When that's not true, you know, we know, statistically speaking, the percentage of individuals that have a mental health concern and are dangerous is slim, very small. You know, it even bothers me, so because I teach abnormal psychology. In the textbooks, there's like D's that you should be considered when it comes to mental health: distress, deviance, dysfunction. And then they put a fourth one, which is danger. And when I'm teaching my clients, I tell them like disregard, or my students, I say disregard danger, because that danger is so minimal. I mean, we'll talk about how it might exist, but I don't want you to have that in your head to think that it's going to be like that. But on the other side of that, so I want to say that because I think there needs to be an awareness that not everybody who has mental health concern, and the majority of people that have mental health concern, won't be in this situation. What I struggle with, and what I want to get your thoughts on first, is the idea that someone who would go and shoot up a school full of kids they don't know, or, and they might be different because it sounds like in this hospital situation, possibly they knew the doctor, I don't know. But in situations where you go and you shoot up people you don't know, whether it's the hospital or the grocery store in Buffalo or in that church, where you go and you shoot up people you don't know at all. And again, I'm not justifying when you do shoot people, but there could be different things going on in your mind when you know someone and you have some logic, as opposed to when you don't know people at all. So in my mind, if someone goes and they decide that they're gonna randomly take lives of people they don't know at all, there has to be something that's going on, some type of pathology in that person's head. That's the only thing that makes logical sense to me. Now, that particular thing that they have going on with them is not representative of everybody else, but we can't say because it doesn't represent everybody else, that doesn't mean that there's not something wrong with them psychologically. It's hard for me to get behind that.
Yeah. I agree with you. To go and hurt people that you don't know, that you're not connected with, that's not connected with any, at least on the surface, not connected with, you just stopped at a random McDonald's. I saw a video of a guy who he had planned to go shoot up his workplace, and he was so enraged, he just stopped at the first McDonald's he could find. He just wanted to displace that energy. And what I'm thinking is it pure evil, or is it some sort of displacement of some sort of pain or energy somewhere that I just need to get? It's so overwhelming, I need to get it out on somebody.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So it's like, it's hard because it's kind of like, where's the humanity in harming children? You know what I mean? Harming women and kids. But in their mind, shit, well, nobody thinking about me. Why should I be thinking about, like, what is going on? Something is going on in their head. Nobody was thinking about me. Nobody cared about me. Nobody saved me when I was little. Nobody. So why should I, you know, something is happening. It's not just willy nilly. I'm just going to hurt some people today. There is something somewhere, some thoughts in their heads that in their mind, they're making connections, or they have figured out a way to justify. There's justification in what I'm doing, even if it's good or not.
Right. So as an example would be, you know, I was watching this video clip. I wish I could remember this individual's name, but he was somebody who has antisocial personality disorder. And for those that don't know what disorder that is, that's what lay people call a psychopath or a sociopath, which those are words that people use, but it falls under the diagnosis of antisocial personality disorder. And this person had been known for murdering a number of people, and most of the people that he had murdered were kids. And that, so they had him on an ABC clip, and they were talking to him, and they were interviewing him about, you know, the people's lives he had taken. And you could see that he was kind of emotionless. He didn't really have a lot of empathy. And in one of the lines of questions, he said something like, you know, I killed them so they wouldn't have to experience the pain. And you're like, what pain? And then you get his history and you realize that he was traumatized at an early age and experienced some unfortunate sexual assaults and different things like this. And again, we're not saying that that's going to always be the case, but look at that mind, look at that logic and process. It doesn't make sense, but it's like this, like, I'm going to, you know, in this case, he raped them before he killed them. I'm gonna inflict all this pain on them and take them out so they don't have to experience any more pain in life. So there's some type of shift in no good theory of mind where there's a disassociation of parts of themselves, in my mind, that they're placing on this victim and thinking in their own logic that they're doing this person a favor in some way. And that is clearly some type of pathology.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw an interview with a guy who went in, shot up his workplace, and it seemed random. Like, he shot, like, all these, he shot the boss, but, like, all these other people. And the question is, why did you could have walked by us and just went and got the boss. Why did you have to shoot up the whole floor? Y'all know what he did. Y'all saw how they treated me. And guess what? If you gonna stay here knowing how they did me, you just as guilty as he is, so I'll be right back. I'm going to the trunk. So it's like, like you said, there's there's a way that they're a lot of times making connections to justify. You have to be, what does CBT teach us? Behind every feeling, there's a thought.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean it's a logical or rational thought. Right. You're thinking something when you feel. So we're trying to figure out, what is it? Is it logical and rational? Where does it come from? And how can we replace that thought in some way with a healthier option or a healthier choice? But there, people are thinking something. It takes some sort of emotion to go and do that. What are you feeling? And what is the thought that is driving that? And is it logical and rational? And it clearly can't be logical and rational, because what could a room full of kids have done to you?
Right. Yeah. And like, if we look at just some other things that come off the top of my head, like the Columbine shooter. Yeah. I mean, you can YouTube that and see there's a conversation with his mother. I think she's done some TED Talks, and you can imagine being a parent that has to live with this circumstance, right? How do you, you know, you probably lots of shame, lots of things that go on, but you listen to her and how she talks about their story, you can see that he clearly had some depression. And yeah. I know it reminds me of what we were talking about before off air, where when these type of things happen, sometimes with certain groups get a pass, other groups like, nah, they don't. That's another interesting conversation and thing to think about. But
yeah.
With him, if you look at it retrospectively and you look at what's going on with him, I would say he definitely had forms of depression. Mm-hmm. We don't know what that could be based on in terms of like what's going on with his family, but he definitely had some depression going on. So I would argue what happens, well, conceptually and from a theory, like a psychodynamic type theory, is that there is difficulty for some people in these situations separating themselves from others, right? So when you feel a lot of pain, like depression, you know, a lot of times people say depression can be thought about, or at least Freud would say, as anger towards others turned inside.
Yeah.
And that's why you know, have the urge to cut yourself, to take your own life, but not all the time that anger that's turned inside really is appropriate to be angry at you. Maybe it's your parents that did you wrong, but for the purpose of protecting yourself and needed to try to maintain some type of love, you can't recognize that. And since you can't recognize that, you have a problem recognizing the difference between you and others. And I think to some degree that happens in these kind of situations. Like, I'm feeling this pain, I'm feeling this anger toward whoever they're feeling the anger at, and they don't know how to appropriately place that anger. And so it gets displaced onto kids, other people, whoever, you know? That's just a hypothesis, but when you look at that Columbine situation, I think you can see that happen. And then
yeah,
look at the shooter in Texas. This dude shot his grandma.
Yeah.
Right? Before. And then, so you already know a couple things, even if you're not a psychologist already, right? So he shot his grandma, so that means at least it's wrong with that relationship, right? Mm-hmm. And then two, he's with his grandma, so where is his parents? That tells you there's probably some type of broken bond with the other parents.
Yeah. Yeah. That was the first thing that's interesting you said that. And I was wondering if you was going to get to that, was I figured you would pick that apart. Like, in the same way that I did, was like, you shot your grandma, where are your parents? Is there some abandonment stuff there? That was exactly a question I was going to ask you, and how that deep-seated abandonment may have led to this detachment that we see with people who are abandoned in life, literally detached, and have a hard time or difficult time making connections and seeing how they're connected to other people. So again, we don't know, but that's interesting that you said that. That was one of the things I was going to ask you, was did you, you know, with those detachment issues, like with those abandonment issues, if there's some abandonment there,
right,
could that lead to the attachment and make it easier to hurt others? It's no different than if you've been hurt as a kid and like you hurt people in relationships. I know this is I'm not trying to compare this to being broken up with, but dogging people or cheating on people in relationships, or you know, not being considerate of people's feelings, is there a parallel, like the ability to not make a connection?
You know what? We are not making them be equal, right? But in the line of trauma and the way that each individual might live it out could be a whole, you know, whole bunch of scenarios. It's like a plethora of possibilities depending on a whole bunch of different things that happen later in life. So I like to do, so attachment and detachment. I like you're using detachment. Like, so I'm seeing that when you say that, like, well, maybe because of whatever, we don't know all the details yet. But whatever this relationship is, a broken relationship with mom, and then dad, we don't see dad either, right? That's a problem with attachment that maybe forms detachment. And then what happens? It's not like people automatically, once they're detached from their caregiver, whenever it is, could be younger or later, say like, oh, I'm cool. I don't really need nobody. Like, you know, I mean, a baby can't even do that, right? A baby, yeah. Ooh, you can't be like, oh, no, I don't need no food. No, mom, I'm good. You need to eat. Like, you can't even do that. So as you get older, even though you don't need like food, well, you still need food, but it doesn't have to come directly from a parent. You still need these other things, but you might have to do some defenses to help you with your reality. So if your reality is on one side, you need parents and they're not there, and your reality is you don't have them there, you got to do something with that. And so that, I think, creates a foundation for you to have a messed up schema.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm detached. That's okay for me to be detached. But it doesn't mean the feelings of loneliness go away. So they do, they might go from just being lonely and being like, you know, I've had people that I've worked with that are like, I am lonely and I'm sad and I feel like things are not going to get better and I need to accept that. And then there could be others that can't really accept it. They feel the pain of loneliness and they don't know how to conceptualize it. Is this pain anger? This should be anger. Who should I be angry at? And then they start with just anger outside, not inside.
Yeah. Yeah. To be, I feel the need to say is, to be clear, anyone who's listening to this or will listen to this, I'm always thinking, we want to be perfectly clear. We are not justifying anybody going out and hurting anybody. It is our jobs to ask what and how. We may never know why, but it is our jobs as health professionals to ask what happened and how did it happen. That is what we do as best as we can. We're human. We all have our biases, but as best as we can, we're constantly checking our biases. We're constantly checking our prejudices. It is our job to figure out what and how, to understand human behavior, and to hopefully help come up with treatments and remedies to prevent these things from happening in the future. So as we tease these things apart, I can hear somebody somewhere saying they're justifying. It's like they're being sympathetic to the shooters. And it's not sympathy, but again, somebody's got to figure out what happened and how. And what are all the different elements and how these elements and how these parts to this jigsaw puzzle fit together so we can prevent this from happening again, hopefully. So we can get the people who are hurting and people who are in pain, so we can get them the help that they need so they find healthier alternatives to direct or redirect their pain, their anger, their shame, their trauma in some way. So that's clear. I just think that's something that we need to be clear about.
Right. I think people got to understand, one, of course, it's our opinions. And we told y'all that at the beginning. Like, these are our opinions, but they are based on some theories and some of our work that we've done. And I'll give you another example. You know, I had in some of my earlier work, I used to work in a residential type setting where it's people that have substance use issues that are involved with the court and have to do their treatment in order not to go to jail. I had a client once, I remember him, like, he was a very nice gentleman, like, you know, out in his groups and well-spoken, and then I had to meet with him and do like an intake. And whenever when I was working with this population, I wouldn't look at their chart before I would meet with them, because they could have done some gruesome stuff and I didn't want to formulate any opinions before I met with them. That's so then I met with him and he was telling me his story. He was there and he was ordered. This was like after his jail. He already served his time, but I need his whole history. So he's telling me his history, right? And he's telling me, yeah, you know, I did some time, however much time he did. Yeah, because I poured bleach on my girlfriend's face and burned half of her face off. And so if I was in a situation of just judging, obviously in my mind, I'm like, man, for that girl, I mean, her face is like half burned off. Like, that was my sister or somebody or something. I would feel a certain way about that. But who's in front of me is this person, right? And they've already done their time for that particular crime. When they start telling me more about the story, then I can start to hear from their perspective. It doesn't mean I agree with it. But from their perspective, the pain and that person's life and the story and what, why they did it and all those things. And the reality is, if you talk to somebody about whatever they do, whether it's as heinous as a mass shooting or just mistreating somebody they're dating, they might have a logic to what they do to you, but there's something behind it. It's not going to be nonsensical for the most part.
Yeah, that's what is interesting. I was just talking about this in a group I did today, and I always reiterate, people are always trying to heal themselves or protect themselves in some way. And it might be, you might be doing all the wrong things, but in your head, people for the most part are always doing what they believe is the right thing at the right time.
Yeah.
And that is hard to grasp when we're on the outside looking in, and some of these acts are so heinous.
Right.
You know, it's just like somebody out there listening right now, you're with somebody who constantly is cheating on you. And it is so heinous, and they continue to put you in pain. But in their mind, they've been hurt so much and so often, I'm going to get you before you get me. Now, it's important. We're not talking about right or wrong. We're trying to figure out the hows and the why. I mean, the how, the what's and the hows, you know. So that's like, so I'm just sort of piggybacking off your point that people always in their heads have a good logical, they have a foundation for what they're doing. Now, whether that foundation is based in love, whether it's based in humanity, in the real world, maybe mutually exclusive. Whether something is, you know, whether there is a logic and a foundation of something, and whether that foundation is based in love and compassion and humanity, are completely different. So the question is, what do we do with all of this? These types of things will never stop.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that there will always be people in pain who will lash out at others. I do wonder if there are things that we can do. The ultimate question from a societal perspective is, I think that as a society, we realize that. We realize that people going to always get hurt. We realize that people going to always kill other people. We realize that people will always hurt other people. The question is what is it that we can do as a society and as communities to minimize the probabilities of these things happening and these things happening on a massive level? That's ultimately that's the political question that people are asking. We're asking, what is it that is what is it that mentally and emotionally drives people? How do people get to a space? You know, there are lots of people who have been abandoned, but they never shot up a school. There are lots of people who've been broken up with, there are a lot of people who've been in pain, who've been cheated on, but they never put bleach on their girlfriend's face and set her on fire. So what is the difference between those people and me? What is the difference between me and them? Is there a difference between me and them? Could I be him under the right circumstances? That is a good question to ask. Because I am a good person and they're a bad person. Or could I be him under the right circumstances?
Well, yeah, it's difficult when you talk about mass shooting because most people are going to be like, nah, man, that's not going to be me. Okay, all right, I can see that. But I'll tell you something, man. My parents both work in corrections, and I think, I don't remember which one of them told me this, but they basically told me, you never know what you could do, what could cause you to commit the type of crime that will put you in prison.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you got to think about that statement for a second. I mean, that's outside of being wrongly convicted of something. But, like, what's going to be that thing? You know, you come home and somebody that broke into your house is like sexually assaulting your wife, you know, or your child. I mean, and you have access to a weapon. I mean, maybe someone would deem that self-defense. Maybe they wouldn't, though. You know what I'm saying? Or maybe you don't see it in the act, but you know who it is who did it. All I'm saying is there are, when we think about human nature in general, like the scale between evil, I mean, there's a couple things to think about. We won't go to religion, but even for those that are, you know, you think about if you're a Christian, then well, Lucifer was an angel, right? Like he did come from heaven and he fell. So that means that there was some good in him at some point. And if you look at the story, we think about it in movies of the villain. The villain doesn't generally start out as a villain. Now, I do think there's some exceptions. There can be some things going on so wrong with the brain that you don't have no conscience. Sure. Yeah. But I also think more people are, something happened in their storyline. And this is just me because I think people are more good natured in general. Something happened in their storyline, like in the movie with the newest Joker with Joaquin.
Yeah.
Where you can see he's going through some struggles and people are not really, they're making fun of him about it. They're not really paying attention to it. They're not trying to help him. And that really doesn't help him in his struggles and causes them to go more on the darker side. Now, I'm not saying it to say, oh, if you don't help someone, they're gonna be dangerous. But I'm just saying that to say, we can't just assume, oh, this person is evil. I understand plenty of people do. This is my own personal thought. But even if they did become evil, were they always evil? That is the question that one has to consider. Like when they were born, when they came out of the womb, they were evil. And, you know, that's, they were like a little 1-year-old ready to be like, you know, knew they were going to shoot up people. I don't know.
This brings about and opens up an entirely different door. How much of not just shootings, just in general, how much of this can be averted by just us loving and paying attention more to the people around us?
I think it's a valid question. You know, I mean,
that's an ugly, excuse me, that, yo, because we, like, I don't know. I mean, we're all we talk about this notion and idea of how interconnected all of our lives are. And that's a scary thing to think about. We don't want to believe that we make the monster.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea of maybe the monster wouldn't be the monster if when I saw him being picked on, I said, stop. Maybe if I would have asked him to sit down with me. Maybe if I would have hugged my kid a little more. Maybe if I didn't throw him in front of the TV. Maybe if I didn't neglect him. Maybe if I would have raised my kids. I wonder how many people who are connected to shooters, either directly or indirectly in some way. I wonder how many of them think about stuff like that. But just as communities, do we have resources? Do we have community centers? Do we have safe places for these kids who are considered, who are not like everybody else, or who are quote unquote outcasts, for them to go and find other kids like them? I don't know. I'm just.
It's a reasonable question. I mean, I think it's a reasonable question for a lot of reasons. I know people might think, oh, that's just romanticizing something. And it doesn't take away from the real pain and the unfortunate result of all the people that have been victimized that had nothing to do with it. In the same vein, we're not going all the way to shooter, and we just go to somebody who has been been impacted in a way that's how they treat people. Maybe it doesn't lead to them actually doing something as heinous as this, but maybe they're just very rude with people. They're short with people. They cut people out of their life. They have a trail of hurting people that is related to the early hurt they experienced. And that same question that the people that are around this person might be asking, if other people ask those questions with the other people that are not going to get to this level, but just going to be the one that's a tyrant at work, the one that's the boss that don't care about other people. And it's not even going to be discovered because that person might be ruthless and whatever, you know. Anyways, there could be some things that could have been done earlier in those relationships that could have changed that whole trajectory. I mean, it's like the Grinch with Jim Carrey.
Yeah.
And you see his childhood and why he became the Grinch.
Yeah. I go back to this statement I've said before here And I say all the time, this question that I kick around a lot, and that a lot, there's so many things that are tied to how we fundamentally see people. Are there good and bad people in the world? Or are we all people who are capable of good and bad things? And I don't think that this, whatever this grace and compassion, that it's like we're knocking on this door of grace and compassion, like in this conversation. And it's like, I don't know. It's almost like I can hear people say, it's almost like we're asking them to be sympathetic to the villain. Should we have sympathy for the monster? And that is hard for someone to do, particularly when we see that they've hurt someone, and particularly if it's someone that, if they've hurt someone that you know.
Yeah.
You know, is that even possible? Like, again, we fundamentally see they're good guys and they're bad guys. And I'm a good guy and you did something bad and you're a bad guy and you need to be put away for it or whatever. And I think as long as we continue to subscribe to that perspective about people, I think that the way we incarcerate people will never change. I think that our abilities to heal people will never change. Our approach to healing will never change. I don't know if anything will ever change. And obviously change is needed with the way we incarcerate people and the way people hurt other people. At least here in our culture, from our cultural perspective. We have to have this fundamental shift in how we see people. And that could be me. That could be any of us. How did he get there? And is it even, I keep talking about us. It's his mom and daddy's job to raise him, not mine. Is it our jobs to speak life into any child or any kid that we see? What do you think?
Man, I think people need to realize when we have these conversations, it's reachable and teachable moments for ourselves. So when you're saying these things, I'm thinking about, okay, like I don't have any kids, but I have, I don't know, 700, 800 students. And, you know, some of them can be, you know, let's say prickly. but it's like remembering to keep that in mind, because the reality is we don't know all of the stories and chapters of the souls that are in front of us. And sometimes you see somebody scream because they haven't been heard. Screams can... when you hear somebody scream, if they're screaming at you, it feels hurtful and painful. And if screaming's not working, then they might go to throwing hands. I'm not justifying any of these things. I'm just letting you know sometimes people that feel like they have been ignored will go to means that are louder. So you have to ask yourself. There was one workshop I was in at one point. It was like a Jungian dream workshop. And basically it said sometimes you get terrorized by things in your dream. It starts out as a subtle thing. And then when you ignore it, it gets more and more intense until it becomes something very scary. And if you would have just turned around and recognized it when it was subtle, it wouldn't have gotten scary. And it's the same thing for someone, even if the interaction is not, it's prickly. When they get prickly with you and you listen to them, there's a possibility they become less prickly.
Yeah.
Say, oh, you know what? This person actually listens to me. And then after you develop that relationship, and any one of us could be the person that develops that relationship.
Yeah.
That could be the game changer. I know that people listening, it probably sounds like a lot of responsibility. And I feel it too, and I'm sure you feel it too, because we have lots of students. But the reality is, this is a team sport, life. You know what I'm saying? Embracing the whole NBA Finals thing. This is a team sport. We don't do it by ourselves. There's not going to be just the five that get through it. If we really want to have the big impact, and we have to go to the outskirts, people that are forgotten about. And just because everybody else is forgetting about them doesn't mean you need to.
Yeah. And like I said, that's we hinting on this idea of culture. That's easier in cultures that are communalistic and collectivistic. But we live in a very individualistic, materialistic, me, mine, I. This is my life and my small circle. And everybody's responsible for themselves and their small circle. And I think that, you know, our culture sometimes promotes this detachedness. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Our culture doesn't necessarily promote how intertwined all of our lives are, and how, you know, this idea of speaking life into each other outside of your circle and outside of yourself, because what matters is capitalism and individualism in you. And we pull ourselves up, and you are who you are because you deserve to be there because you got yourself there. So I don't know, man, we up on time. I don't know, something to think about. I mean, prayers to all of these families out there who are experiencing this. Anybody who've experienced this, I heard someone say once, like, for every Martin Luther King you hear about, it's 1,000 other brothers' names that you'll never hear. I think that for every shooting that you hear about, there are 1,000 other, how many people do I know in my neighborhood that have been shot? I've seen a whole skating ring of people shot up that never made the news because maybe my neighborhood wasn't important enough. And that's a whole other conversation for another day. And the cat that shot up this skating ring was presented as a monster. Nobody talked about his mental health, you know, because when poor black kids do it, they monsters because they know what they're doing. So I'm just saying all that to say, not just, you know, prayers, peace, and blessings to the people who have been affected by what we see in the media, and for all of those out there that we don't.
Yeah.
Because there are people who are out there who are hurting, and because they're hurting, they hurt other people, and we never hear about it. And, prayers, peace, and blessings to everybody out there. None of this is easy. And especially as a co-host, I appreciate you not shying away from this. As soon as it happened, like, you hit me up and was like, we gotta deal with this. And you have never, you know, that's the one thing that I appreciate about you as a friend, as a brother, and as a professional, and as a colleague, is that you have never shied away from talking about the truly hard topics and being honest about them, giving your honest perspective and opinion, and also bringing in theory and ideas. But you've never shied away. This could have been an easy one for us to, like, not put hands on just because we know it might get ugly. We could very easily get a call after this one, easily. Mm-hmm. So, because we've gotten calls for less. So, I just appreciate you working with you and you being willing to be brave enough. Like, I think that's what it's about, is political courage, having the courage to say the things that need to be said when they need to be said, whether you want to say them or not, whether people will like them or not. That's a lot of what it's about. So I appreciate you just being willing to take the risk to even address some of this stuff. Who knows how many hundreds of thousands, how many hundreds of thousands of people. I mean, this is on wax now. Who knows how many people will hear this. So it takes a lot of bravery and courage, and I appreciate you.
We're hoping at least one.
Yeah. Exactly. Again, we thank you all. Any questions, comments, or suggestions, B2B Psych, B the number 2, B P S Y C H, B2BPsych@gmail.com. Again, you can also connect with us on our social media platforms, Keelan Hinton, Dr. Nate Chapman, Chapman Consulting, and.
Yeah, it's www.chapmantrainingandconsulting.com.
Yeah. And he has a ton and a plethora of other resources. His availability for speaking, like I said, he's a dynamic speaker. He brings a lot to the table. So definitely check him out. Check his page out. Check his services out. Like I said, if you want the best, that's where you find the best. All right. So again, as we always say, peace and blessings all out there who've been affected directly and indirectly. As we said before, life is, you know, somebody went to the grocery store just to get a carton of milk and didn't make it home. And those are the things that we talk about. That's how we finish our show weekly, is that none of us know if we're promised tomorrow. And at the end of the day, you ain't talking to your mama. You're not talking to your cousin or your sister. Is it really worth it? We always make these assumptions that we got time, and Father Time is on all of us, and none of us know when. But you got the unmitigated gall to be mad at somebody over something that's nothing, probably. So it's like, you know, the people in your life, make sure they know you love them. Make sure you're doing something you're truly chasing something that set your soul on fire. And like we said, whenever death come to get you, because he's coming to get all of us, make sure you don't give him nothing but an empty shell. Make sure everything that you love and that you want and you desire, you're at least trying. So peace and blessings to everybody out there. And Dr. Chapman will take us out as always.
All right, folks, I got a couple things on my mind. We'll see if we can get them all out. I want to first thank you, Dr. Keelan Hinton. You know, my brother from another mother. I think it's good to have these conversations with you, but to grow with you professionally and personally. And, you know, we dialogue regularly, and that means a lot to me in my life. And I just want you to know that, like we're talking about the, you know, we never know. And that is true for everyone. We don't know the time. You know, we just try to, I think with life, how I try to think about it is you want to be that car that has, you know, ran all your miles off, no matter what year you are. So like, even if they come and get me early, like, I'm like, oh, well, you know, he used all he could while he was here. And that's how I think it should be for all of us. I guess I want to speak to a couple of things. I want to speak to the people out there just because this is on my mind because I've had some people that I've worked with lately who have been struggling with maybe thoughts of wanting to take their life and whatnot. I think some of you may be out there, may be hurting in different ways. And it might be because you feel like nobody really cares about you. And I know we're just radio voices and you don't know us, but I want to jump back and tell you that there is somebody who cares about you. Sometimes people are not saying it to you. They're not speaking it to you. They're not, you know, right there on a daily basis, letting you know that that's happened. But if you're not here, it's going to be a hole. You know, and you don't have to compare what that hole is going to be like for another person. You know, your hole is going to be your hole. It doesn't have to be like what the other person, oh, this person's not here, they're not going to feel. They're going to feel it in this way because of what they do. Because you may not recognize, because people may not be voicing what it is they appreciate about you in this moment. But and I'm not saying that just for hyperbole, just to be saying it. That's what I truly believe. And I hope that you can let me be a stand-in for somebody who you would like to hear that from, because we want you here on this earth. Then I would want to speak to just people that, you know, are going through some things, right? Rather that you experience trauma that's coming from somebody else, you know, they say we've been talking about this whole idea of maybe hurting people, whether they have a mental health concern or not. And maybe what you want to do is get some help for your journey, right? Recognizing that pain has been inflicted upon you so that you don't keep that going and so that you don't bleed over other people. And that you go get that assistance that you need. I know that will be a hard step, a very hard step for anybody who has never done it, to go see some stranger to talk about your life in a deep way. And also, just to realize, and maybe we'll do a show about this, the first person you see doesn't have to be the last person you see. Even if you are on some type of insurance panel that only recommends a certain amount of people, sometimes I think people think, oh, this is the only person I can see because this is the first person that's recognized. And when that doesn't work, you're done. Well, you know, therapists are people. Sometimes it's going to be a fit. Sometimes it ain't it. What you're going to have to do is keep trying it out until you get it to work out. And the other thing I would say for those of you that are in your role as a friend, you know what I think has more power than a mental health professional? A friend. You were like, well, I don't know because I don't know how no degrees. Well, you don't need no degrees. All you need is two ears. You know, and that's easy for me to do because my ears are big. You guys can't see them, but they're bigger than the normal person. But that's all you need, two ears. If you can really listen and listen with your ears and listen with your heart. And sometimes that's more than other people are getting in other places. So get it with your ears. Have a good day. We'll see you all next time.
Hey, this is Jenny from the Erickson.
This is Kyle Bachman from Kyle.